all those of you who have thought about selling everything and sailing off into the sunset, listen up. The tagline on John Ameron's blog reads, "No more kayak sports specialty store, just life." Now, as many of our listeners will recall, John and his then-wife, Jennifer, started the first kayak business in Cook County, Cascade Kayaks, which morphed over the years into Superior Coastal Sports, run by John alone. And then, after all the effort of a major business expansion and a new building in 2009, John was basically forced to liquidate his business and sell his building, which has now become the Stone Harbor Wilderness Supply in Grand Marais. So now it is, quote, just life, close quote, for John. But he's made it an interesting life on a relative shoestring. He has kayaked the Northwest coast from the state of Washington to Alaska in 2010 with Dave and Amy Freeman on their journey, and has satisfied a lifelong ambition of paddling his kayak around Lake Superior in 2012, the northern leg of which was with Dave and Amy Freeman. But the last two winters, John, through the internet, has booked on as a volunteer crew on two different sailboats cruising the Caribbean in an effort to gain some experience for when he himself can own and cruise with his own sailboat. But neither of these efforts went exactly as planned. And so John is joining us now via telephone from the Twin Cities, where he has just recently returned from the Caribbean, to tell us what happened. John Ameron, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Hi, Dick.
It's nice to have you here. Now, John, we can get into your kayak adventures if the time permits, but I really want to focus on your volunteer crew experience and your plans for future sailboat cruising. And I should mention, by the way, that folks can... Actually, if anybody who's listening now wants to look on their computer at superiorcoastal.blogspot.com, you can see John's blog on these last couple of years, and including the kayak trips and so on. The first question I have for you, John, is how did you locate these volunteer crew opportunities?
The two previous winters, I made a connection on Cruisers Forum. They have specific threads for seeking crew and seeking boat. I just read through boat seeking crew and then contacted people. That's what I did. There's actually about at least 8 that I know of other potential online things to connect with a boat.
Besides the cruise.com or whatever that you just gave
me. Yeah, Cruisers Forum is just it's just a big online forum.
That puts you in touch with a captain or an owner, a boat owner or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And you choose based on what?
Well, I mean, since I plan to just get a boat of a feasible size for me to afford to own, I'm looking to find time on that size boat, not a big tall ship with a big crew or that kind of thing. So.
Okay, roughly what size boat were you limiting yourself to?
Yeah, you know, like 35 to 40 feet.
Okay.
You went in
2000, let's see, was it 2012-13 winter and then 2013-14 winters?
Right.
What was the deal in each case? I mean, what did you agree to do? What did they expect from you? What did you expect from them?
I was willing to chip in and cover my share of the food and basically not have my being there add to their expense in exchange for being able to come along and hopefully learn, but not be involved with chipping in on fuel and boat maintenance and country fees, you know, for when the boat...
And marina and docking fees
and
things
like
that.
Yeah, marina fees, all those kinds of things, but...
And did they? What kind of information did they ask of you each time?
Not nearly enough, I suppose. They just like, oh, sweet, we found someone, kind of like, and I said, oh, sweet, I found a boat. So, and it's not. It's really. I recommend doing a little more research.
Yeah, I think that was your. I mean, I'm looking on your blog right now where you recap just recently your last trip, and you talked about. this is the second, I'll quote exactly, this was the second winter in a row of seeking volunteer crew positions, and while quite different experiences, neither ended up being the kind of thing a sane person would volunteer for. So you've obviously gained some insights here in what you should do, but let's go to that 2012-2013 trip. Could you describe where and what with the first meeting with the owners was like and what your first impression was?
Not the online meeting on Skype, but actually...
No, when you went to Jamaica.
Yeah. Yeah. I met them in Jamaica. They met me at the airport in Kingston, and then we drove across in a taxi to Port Antonio. The boat, which I'd seen a couple photos of, I don't know if those are recent photos, but it was really badly neglected. And I found out that, in fact, it had been completely neglected the previous 12 years. And it was a 77-year-old Jamaican-born dual U.S. citizen and a girlfriend of 3 years that where they met on eHarmony, and she was German, and she was the one that said, "We need help," and so they got me, and we had nothing but trouble turning the boat.
And what kind of marina were they in?
Well, at Port Antonio, we were in the old marina, and there's a new marina called Errol Flynn Marina, because I guess Errol Flynn used to own an island there, and anyway, they named a marina after him. But we were in the old one, which really, you know, it just really didn't have, we were on a wall, there really was no docks, and there was no facilities to speak of. But.
So it was kind of a budget marina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what was the trip plan? What were you going to
be I was
going
to help them sail to the Virgin Islands and beyond, potentially, you know, but the Virgin Islands was kind of like the for sure destination.
So did you start out right away?
No, we were there about 4 days doing a few things. They had hired this one local Jamaican guy to kind of help do things, and they should have done a lot more things. They're, you know, I mean, anyway.
Was the boat as well equipped as you would have expected?
No. I mean, in addition to being neglected, it was completely lacking on navigation, not just conventional navigation as far as charts or, I didn't really have any current cruising guide. I had some very, very, very old cruising guides with just text and no diagrams of maps. And he didn't have any detailed charts, and he didn't have a chart plotter. He did have a handheld GPS. The navigation was so lacking that I ended up downloading Navionics of the Caribbean on my iPad, or we would have been in a bad way.
Still there, maybe, floating around somewhere. So maybe you've already sort of answered that question, but what was the first indication that this wasn't going to be a good experience?
Well, just the boat was not at all well-kept, and then... I guess when I really realized it was going to be bad was when the engine, after the first maybe 2 hours of use, quit, never to run again until it had been quite a few days later, and we had a diesel mechanic do some repairs in Barahona, Dominican Republic.
So you got to the Dominican Republic, though. So you left the Port Antonio.
Yeah, we left, and, you know, we're going to do... We were going to go all the way to check into the Dominican Republic, which was going to be, you know, however many days. There's a one knot current flowing east to west, and the winds are pretty much easterly in that area. So to go the direction we were going without an engine on a sailboat is like a huge, you just generally don't try to do it. And it was... We ended up sailing 5 days nonstop, day and night, to get to the Dominican Republic, which was just barely across the Haitian border. And I don't know. I guess the thing with the engine is it had an oil leak, a water leak, and a fuel leak. And it had a safety features built in that would shut the fuel supply off if the oil pressure dropped too low. And it would also shut the fuel supply off if the engine temperature got too high. And, you know, so we encountered that. And I never forget when the captain said to his friend, I won't use names, but he said to his girlfriend, "Didn't we have Chris?" That was the guy in Jamaica. "Where did Chris put the oil I told him to buy?" And discovered that not only did they not bother to see if their engine was up to snuff beyond the fact that it would start and run, they didn't bring any extra engine oil along. Because we could have at least, you know, kept adding oil and used the engine if we had had enough oil, but there was, he had a half a quart somewhere. But
you wound up having to buy some oil, as I remember, and never
got reimbursed. Yeah, I paid $50 for a gallon jug of engine oil from a fisherman. He wanted $60 because, you know, it was a
rare commodity, yeah.
It was a rare commodity, and it required him to take his motorbike to a nearby town and all of this, but.
So ultimately, you expressed some displeasure with the personalities that you were dealing with as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, the captain, you know, he was a pretty cool, old, laid-back, Jamaican-born, 77-year-old, pretty spry and fit, kind of a little reckless and almost like he had a death wish, like he would be okay with dying on the sea or something.
This is real comfortable.
The girlfriend was, she was okay at first, but turned out to be really kind of ruthless, and well, she was crabby a lot as things weren't going well, that she changed from being pleasant to being crabby when things weren't going well, and I mean that's maybe understandable, but she was ruthless this was on the return trip, because we only made it to a little past Barahona, Dominican Republic, and then suddenly we were retreating back to Jamaica. So
you went right back to where you started from. Okay.
Well, yeah, and we stopped in Haiti on the way back, and the cruiser guide is sort of like one of two places where they recommend that cruisers go because of the poverty and potential crime. And
In other places, you mean
it's not generally considered a cruiser destination, but there are a couple places where it's okay. In fact, you're very much appreciated. I mean, what it means is you get a lot of the local guys, young and old, coming to your boat wanting to do whatever it is that you want done.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
and you know, so if you're going to stay there too many days, that gets old after you've done the laundry.
Bought
the lobster, had your hull scraped, and so on and so forth.
So you hung in there, but you were blogging about this right along, weren't you?
It was not that hard. I mean, it was 5 days nonstop, but then we were like, if I remember, it was 24 straight days at a kind of decrepit marina in Barahona, dealing with getting the engine fixed and basically wasting time. Getting the engine fixed only took a couple of days, but lining someone up or finding someone to do it apparently took a lot of days.
Sure. Were your hosts able to read your posts at all? Because they were pretty critical.
I actually don't know how that went.
Okay.
But, you know, they
so how did the trip end?
They commented a little bit, but I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah. Well, you weren't getting along real well with it.
They wanted me to help them sail to Montego Bay, and I got off the boat in Port Antonio. And the German lady had been reprimanding me or scolding me, or I'm not sure what the deal was, but I just had had enough. And
so
part of it was my mother, like who I had sort of stayed in email contact with, suddenly wasn't emailing me, and I heard through one of her friends, who I was able to email, that she had gone into a physical therapy thing. You know, like, I mean, basically, I sort of wanted to get home. I left, and they wanted me to help sail them to Montego Bay, and with them, I wasn't sure if that was going to be a 3 or 4 day thing or a 3 or 4 week thing, so I bowed out and took a bus Montego Bay, because that's where I flew out of.
So. A little safer.
That took a day or two.
Okay, yeah, so despite that experience, you went back to it this year. You did the same thing. I went on the internet, found another couple that needed a crew.
Well, this was just a single guy.
Oh, single guy, okay.
Yeah, so this was, I'd mentioned that he's, and this is sort of part of what I learned. Now, this particular one I learned early on was very paranoid and secretive, so when I first started the blog, you know, I mentioned the name of his boat and I mentioned his first name, but I changed all that and I referred to him from then on as Captain and didn't bother identifying the boat with photos or name.
And this time you...
Because
okay.
I didn't think, I knew he would not want it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So this time you met him in Marathon City, Florida.
Marathon, Florida, yeah.
And there's a marina there, and you wound up spending more time there than you expected, right?
Yeah, he said it would be 7 to 10 days waiting for a weather window to cross the Gulf Stream, and we were at that marina for 5 weeks. It's a mooring buoy. It's basically a mooring buoy, live aboard marina. Pretty much everybody there lives on their boats, whether they're there year-round. There's a fair amount of people that live there year-round and work and kids on the boat going to school and the whole thing.
Oh,
and then
sure.
There's others that, transients that come in for the winter cruising season and kind of hang out there.
So you were
a
getting...
lot of them are waiting to cross the Gulf Stream, either to the Bahamas or south. We were heading to Mexico, Belize, and Guatemala. His ultimate destination, it was Rio Dulce, Guatemala, where he plans to hang out for a couple of years to see what he thinks of it.
Okay, so after 5 weeks of waiting, you finally did make a break for it. He actually made a break and had to come back at one time.
Yeah, we had what seemed to be an ideal weather window, and we went out and ran into some choppy waves, and he suddenly said, "This ain't going to work," and then we turned back. I don't really know. I mean, it was an old racing. His boat was an old racing design, so it's kind of lighter weight, 37 feet. But, you know, it didn't have much inertia, so, you know, like, motor. And we were motoring because it seemed like anything with decent sailing winds wasn't good enough for crossing the Gulf Stream. So we were mostly in lighter winds or very non-existent winds when we were crossing the Gulf Stream.
Now, ultimately, you got going and you crossed the Gulf Stream, and you went to something you called the Forbidden Island.
I mean, I don't really like to use. I don't really know what the repercussions are there. You hear all these horror stories,
yeah.
But
okay,
but the potential consequences don't sound very good. However, I don't think it's that big of a deal. It certainly shouldn't be that big of a deal. But the original plan was to go from Key West to the Dry Tortugas, and then directly to Mexico, which is like a three day and night nonstop crossing. But after not finding a long enough weather window for that, we went to the Forbidden Island.
Okay.
Straight south, yeah.
And you were able to moor there.
And that was cool because, you know, I got to see the Forbidden Island.
Yeah, lots of old
for
cars.
For 3 weeks, roughly.
All right. Well, I should have reminded everyone here who may have just tuned in that you're listening to The Roadhouse on WTIP in Grand Marais, and I'm speaking with John Ameren about his... cruising experiences in the Caribbean the last couple of years, and John, I had a million things I wanted to talk to you about further, but let me just say that this one also came to a sort of an abrupt end. Can you just characterize where you got to and how it ended?
Yeah, he had a certain way, and I really wanted to see Rio Dulce, Guatemala, so I was just really toughing it out, and things kind of came to a head. Just south of Punta Allen, Mexico, and we ended up with another probably separate new rudder issue, but we were going to go to Punta Allen to maybe find 20 feet of quarter-inch stainless steel cable. I said I doubted it, but he wanted to try, and in the course of getting the outboard on the dinghy, he spewed another version of his kind of belittling comments, which I had really been just ignoring and putting up with. It's like, just untie the green and white mooring line, tie it on the outboard and lower it down. You know, this just got too old. So I kind of lost my temper and I called him a nasty name and said I'd had enough. And so next thing you know, I'm
in the dinghy,
you know, getting off the dock in Punta Allen with 40 pesos in my pocket, wondering if I'm going to find a place that takes credit cards.
And you did manage to do
three
that.
U.S. dollars.
You did manage to do that, and ultimately we were able to book a. You stayed a little while in Playa.
Well, it was actually the highlight of my trip because they ran into this really cool Canadian woman in a Westphalia van, 50 steps from the dock.
Wow.
Who was on a over 4 month road trip from British Columbia, and she was about my age, and then she didn't know about credit cards or anything, but I ran into a nice young couple from England who were staying at one of probably two places in the whole town that do take credit cards. So I stayed at the place they were at and caught a ride to Playa del Carmen with them. So
all right. Well,
it worked out pretty good.
it sounds like it. But let me ask you this. Do you plan to volunteer next year on a crew?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, I don't need to decide that now. I think that I've learned a lot these last two times, and I mean, you know how it is. Things are kind of like up in the air when you're about to meet up with a stranger to live on a small boat for an extended period of time, and you never know how it's going to go, but I will try to find out.
Yeah, you've actually put it on your blog that if there are, and I'll give you a chance to say that here, that you're looking for a woman who might want to join you on.
Yeah, ideally, don't really want to do it alone. I'm not going to not do it because I happen to be single. But you know, like the best part of doing this the last couple of years is not so much the boat I ended up with and the people I didn't necessarily mesh with very well, but a lot of these other people cruising and living on sailboats.
Sure.
And there's a lot of couples, and of course, you know, they seem. Like that's what I like to do.
All right, folks.
And,
well,
I mean, first of all, then you don't have to seek volunteer crew for crying out loud.
You
don't know what you're going to get.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. So, John Ameren, we've been talking to John Ameren, and John's blog is superiorcoastal.blogspot.com. He's also on Facebook. It's a real fun story to follow. John, we didn't get to talk about your kayak trips and how they compare with sailing and everything, but we've run out of time here. I've got to say goodbye, but I want to say good luck and thank you very much for taking time to talk about your experiences. I wish we had enough time to get more advice for folks from you, but you certainly had some great and interesting experience. I encourage people to look at the blog, and thanks again, John, for being here with us.